Monday night on the Fan pregame. Welcome in, Ailish and Justin, for the next hour in our festive set. It's December. We got some...
It's holly, it's jolly. Yeah. We're getting there.
It's lovely in here. We just need a air freshener that smells like pine.
Honestly, that's not a bad suggestion. I'm not going to be the person to do it, but I welcome your efforts.
Like, if it smelled a little...
You want to take that over?
Wintergreeny in here.
Yeah.
Be feeling like we're almost there. So December, we got the Four Nations face-off rosters in a few days. We'll make sure we give you all the info on how to watch live on Wednesday when all of the rosters are announced. So we will do our final roster selections in a moment. We might have some mulligans for you. Frank Iosola is going to join us in about 10 minutes to do a little NBA talk. We got Miami and Boston on the network, a 7:30 start on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1. Kind of our main look ahead tonight. We got some Juan Soto tidbits for you, obviously.
It's been a few days, so yeah, it's about that time.
He hasn't signed yet, in case you didn't know. And Mr. Game 7, Justin Williams, will join us to wrap up the show around 6:30. We'll go through some of the games tonight. We got Amazon Prime's got the Leafs and the Blackhawks. We'll talk about his Hurricanes and a little bit about the Four Nations, see if he has any predictions for us, and then best bets, of course. But every Monday, we've been doing our Canada Four Nations picks, and we might have to ask...
What's with the hesitation?
Because it's funny, because we might have to ask our listeners for a little bit of grace. We want one mulligan.
Yeah, you said mulligans. I'm not asking for more than one.
Well, it's one mulligan, one breakfast ball, which I always give to Justin when we play, and you always return the favor, and I think that's fair.
You take them without asking, but that's fine. I'm all for breakfast balls.
Well, we have an unspoken agreement. There's always a breakfast ball. But we're also going to bend the rules a bit and have one injury replacement, even though that person is not deemed out yet. We're going to do something.
No. Mark Stone has not played hockey in like a month. So I'm confident in us coming to the table and asking for a redo on Stone, given that we expected him to be doing stuff for the last 4 weeks.
He's injured.
He's not doing stuff. He might be on this team eventually when it's all said and done, because injuries do happen. But I think taking Stone at this point, and we put him in Stone almost a month ago, I feel like we get a redo on that one.
Okay, so...
The other one's a bit shameless.
The other one is shameless, but we never said we were professionals at this. We just tried our best. And there's also one other piece of information that we saw on X today. So we think
Why don't we start there?
Okay, so we think that Konechny and Sanheim have already been told that they've made the team. Because at the Flyers practice, they were celebrating at center ice and getting patted on the head and in a very congratulatory manner. Why would Konechny and Sanheim be getting that?
Yeah, leave it to John Tortorella for letting some of the information that they're trying desperately to not leak.
It seems like it's leaked.
Get out there. Yeah, Siobhan Nolan of the Hockey Writers tweeting earlier today, John Tortorella smiling really big. The guys are cheering
which never
and patting.
Happens.
Travis Sanheim, Travis Konechny, and Rasmus Ristolainen sounds like they've made their Four Nations rosters. So in an effort to be perfect, and we're not going to be perfect, I hate to break it to everybody, we got to add those two Canadians, right?
Yep.
So they weren't necessarily going to be on our team, and that shows just how wrong we're going to be, but we're going to include them this week because...
I didn't even think of Travis Sanheim once.
Well, it's hard to get the real deal analysis on Sanheim, given that he's playing for a team in Philadelphia that you're watching only a couple times a year. Let's be honest. Like, even if you're hosting the Fan Hockey Show, are you dialed into Flyers games every single
night? Those guys are dialed into everything.
Yeah, they might be. But even then, I think it's difficult. Even on great defensemen playing for bad teams, it's hard to get a good read. So comfortably saying, hey, look at the contributions that are amounting to really nothing. How could you really desperately want them on your Canadian roster, but maybe Sanheim's talent is shining through at a level that we are not privy to.
And so Konechny is going to be added to our roster with the idea that we think that they're celebrating him being on the roster already. So we're getting a little heads up there. We are going to add in Konechny as our forward, but we're also going to replace Stone with Hagel.
Mm-hmm. Brendan Hagel of the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Who deserves to be on the team.
Yeah, and we got like John Cooper gushing over Hagel plus, and we'll get to the plus in a second. Mm-hmm. But I think Hagel was definitely, we've been thinking about him the last couple weeks, and I definitely think he deserves to be on there, given that he gives you a little bit more, the positional aspect, him being a left winger.
Definitely.
He seemed like a guy that we'd been kind of circling around for large portions of this process. So I think we're comfortable using that injury replacement on Hagel, but it does come sort of in tandem with the guy we want to use the mulligan on.
So our mulligan is going to be on Nick Suzuki.
And you can blame me for this because I was pounding the table for Nick
Suzuki. You were definitely more Nick Suzuki, pro-Nick Suzuki than I was. But don't worry, I have a mulligan maybe for the defenseman that I campaigned for. So if we use our mulligan on Nick Suzuki and switch him with Cirelli, I think that that looks really good. And with all this being said, we're going to move Connor Bedard down to our 13th forward slot.
Now, I think that says something about us.
We don't want to give up the Bedard.
We do want to give up on it, or at least one of us does, but we are not taking too many breakfast balls. We're trying to be as honest as possible with our scoring here. But Connor Bedard, we're going to ride with because we did take him, and we do still believe that there is a chance he'll be on this team in a 13th forward role where he's maybe getting some good vibes his way with a great team, some mentorship from the
likes of Sidney Crosby. I think he's there to sell merch, to get mentorship, and to get himself in position to play in the Olympics next year.
I feel like Doug Armstrong doesn't care about the merch, but I do feel like they look at Connor Bedard as potentially a big part of 2026, and to include him in this in a lesser role with the mentorship thing, I think it does make some sense still. Maybe less sense given how he's played. But we're going to stick with Connor Bedard.
Yes. I feel like it's hard to imagine this big, brand new thing, this debut Four Nations face-off without the guy that's going to be one of the faces of Canada, whether he's playing that way or not right now. I still see the validity in bringing him as a 13th forward if we're looking towards the big dance, which is the Olympics in a year and a bit. I think having him there, if you're going by merit, maybe Macklin Celebrini should be in there. But I'm just thinking that I can't imagine them announcing this without Connor Bedard. So he's moved down to our 13th.
Okay, so run down the forwards for us.
All right, and this is not really in any particular order of in terms of lines, but we tried our best. Hyman, McDavid, Marner.
Top line.
Marchand, Crosby, McKinnon.
Shout out East Coast.
Shifley, Point, Reinhardt. Okay. Hagel, Cirelli, Konechny, and Bedard.
I do love that fourth line.
Hagel, I think Cirelli, that's Konechny. Awesome. And in consideration still, and there's still names that, like, these are what we've seen floated around. That's no Tom Wilson, John Tavares, Lafreniere, Strome, Stamkos, Duchesne, like, some of these guys can't make the team.
I don't feel bad, really, about any of those six not making
those are on the outside looking in. Best of luck for 2026.
I think we nailed it.
Okay, defensemen. So we are adding Sanheim with the information that we gleaned today from Twitter. But if we had a breakfast ball or a mulligan, we are kind of both debating Evan Bouchard's involvement. I still think he's going to make the team, even though I don't know if he should make the team. I think in a perfect world, if we were creating the roster, we wouldn't have Bouchard, we'd have Tanev.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more up for debate, but thinking more about Tanev as people have been talking about it, I mean, he is exactly what you need in this tournament, which is just tried and true defensive guys who will get in the way of shots, who will stifle offense. He is probably, if you're picking the seven best defensive defensemen from Canada, he's a shoo-in. He's probably a top-line guy. But which way will they go? And will they prefer the partnerships that we have preferred with our list with Taze, Makar, Theodore, and Pietrangelo? Singularly,
like
are those the best
like
four?
Rocks in terms of them
agree,
playing
because
together,
of the partnership. But are they singularly, if they didn't have these partnerships, if Pietrangelo was American and Theodore was Canadian, am I putting Theodore on the team? I'm not really sure. But I think Tanev thrown into any situation is going to give you that shutdown ability, that defensive or that penalty killing ability. And I think he makes a lot of sense. I just don't think, especially with the Sanheim addition, that he'll end up being on the team. Bouchard, I'm not convinced of either. Like, I was kind of wishy-washy on it. I didn't really want to include him when we were going through this process because I think there's some redundancy there with Cale Makar. But thinking about it more and thinking about Sanheim getting in, I don't know if Doug Armstrong is going to look at the skill set of Bouchard and demand that he's on the team. I don't know how he's going to play top 6 minutes if he's not the quarterback at the power play, and I don't think Cale Makar is giving up that position. So if I had a second mulligan, I'd probably be kicking Bouchard out and picking either Uyghur or Tanev.
I'm in agreement. He's locked in, unfortunately, because we're only giving ourselves one breakfast ball. But Bouchard could be someone that we might see swapped out. There's lots of great talent that we mentioned. Uyghur, Tanev, Owen Power has been making a case for himself. Montour, Hamilton, and Doughty. We know that there's some injury concerns. They really want to have Drew Doughty on this team. Like, he might be a guy that's added the day of. So there might be a question mark right now. Maybe they don't announce 7D or they announce 6D and somebody knows that they're on their way out if Drew Doughty's available. Because everything you hear and everyone that's talking about this team knows that they want Drew Doughty in that. He's supposed to come back in time, but, like, what quality of player? I don't know. Maybe he's obviously...
It seems very hopeful. Yeah. Just flat out. Like,
so maybe he's not named to it now.
How do you know? And maybe he's named to it.
He's named to it, and they can, if he's not ready, they can replace him. Maybe. I know they can do that.
Okay.
And then Dobson, another guy that's just in the running in terms of some defense. And then finally, goaltenders. You know, we locked in Binnington and Thompson in the last couple of weeks, and we're going to lock in Aiden Hill for our third spot.
Yeah, Kelly McCrimmon knows him. I think it's a safe play. I think he's an option for 2026. So not burning that bridge makes sense, maybe more so than going Marc-Andre Fleury, where it's more
I like the Marc-Andre Fleury of it all.
Sidney Crosby and all that.
And leadership.
And Cam Talbot did get hurt.
And so he was 100-1 when I bet him to join the team. So
yeah, I mean, it might be there for you. I think it's still alive.
I don't think it's solidified until we find out on Wednesday.
Yeah, unless John Tortorella and other coaches conduct
it.
Practice.
Yeah, let me know.
Make sure there's leaks.
Okay, let's take a look at the roster up on Sportsnet if you're watching. Here they are. Those are our little breakfast balls. Cirelli, Hagel. Hagel as an injury addition. Cirelli as our one Suzuki swap. Let's see how accurate we can be. I don't know if it's 100%, but I'd say we're in the 90s. We're going to get an 85-plus score.
I'll say we get 85%.
Okay. We'll see. It'll be announced on Wednesday. We'll make sure we get you set for all of that. Okay, we'll shift over to some basketball tonight. We got Miami and Boston on the network on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1. To help us look around the league and to tee that up is Frank Iosola, who's joining us of the starting lineup, SiriusXM NBA Radio, and Around the Horn. Frank, appreciate you joining. How are you?
Good. How old is Marc-Andre Fleury at this point? He's got to be like 40,
he's
right?
He's quite old, but you know what he brings?
I don't think quite 40.
He brings a good veteran experience, and yeah, he's 40. He turned 40,
drafted
unfortunately.
Drafted in 2003?
1984.
All right, so A, one of you were wrong about his age, and then how dare you say, you know, he's old. 40's not old.
In the context of NHL players and athletes in general, pretty old, but you're right. He's still young and spry, and I bet he could still play for a little while longer. I'm not really sure why he's hanging him up, being honest.
You guys are killing Marc-Andre Fleury, and really, by extension, you're killing me as well. All right, let's go.
Hey, I'm closer to Fleury than I really want to be, Frank. Let's be honest here. Okay, so let's get to the association. We're 6-7 weeks into the year. I think that's definitely enough runway to take some reasonable learnings from what we've seen so far. And if we're talking learnings and we're talking about teams that have pushed themselves to the forefront, you got to talk about the Cavaliers with the league's best record so far. But really, the Eastern Conference conversation has been about, is anyone going to get to the level of Boston? So with the Cavaliers' hot start and the 1-1 record against Boston so far this year, do we have a legit challenger to the Celtics in the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Well, I think the Cavaliers can be. I think if you look at their history the last few years, what always happens to them, and it happened last year in the playoffs, Jared Allen was hurt. Donovan Mitchell, I think, missed the last two games of that series against Boston. So they're a really good team. Kenny Atkinson, their new head coach, has done a good job. I mean, it's a high-scoring offense. So last night, it's hard to take, you know, sometimes these games, it's a little, you know, hard to take because, you know, Jaylen Brown and Derek White, two starters for the Celtics, weren't even available. So the Celtics, when healthy, I think are head and shoulders above everybody. But Cleveland is legit. I don't think there's any question about it. I still think the Knicks will get better. They're going to need Mikal Bridges to play at a much higher level. But Cleveland has gotten off to a really good start. What's funny about it, you know, they've only lost a few games, and yet they're not even in the NBA Cup. They've already been eliminated from their group play. So here's like this team that I'm sure the league would like to feature maybe a little bit more. Instead, it looks like you'll get the Atlanta Hawks, and I think they're the team that won that group.
Actually, it's great that you brought up the NBA Cup, the Emirates Cup. I want to ask you a little bit about that because we have a lot of fun kind of predicting it before it starts. Which team would want to try the hardest? Which team, you know, actually values this as a successful endeavor in their season? And it's year two. Do you think it's been more or less successful in its second season? Maybe capturing audiences, getting the teams to play for something, or maybe ultimately something that's going to take a little bit more time to catch some steam.
Yeah, it felt like last year. I think the novelty of it. People were somewhat interested in that. I think the NBA did a smart thing with having a different court design. You know, some of the courts were a little rough. The ones that are red are tough to look at. Even like the really dark, dark blue ones were a little wacky. But I thought it stood out. You know, if you're in a bar and you don't have the sound on and you're thinking, well, what's going on there? Why is it different? And then you realize it's the NBA Cup games. What I don't like about it is, you know, you're not playing everyone home and away. I know they're trying to, you know, compare it to, say, the Champions League in soccer in Europe, but those teams, you know, in those situations, they're usually playing a home and away game. So I thought that part of it is a little wacky. What I would do, I would think, maybe just play it every other year to make it a little bit more unique. I think playing it this season, it, I don't know about you guys, it just seems like it's worn off a little bit. I think the fact that the Lakers won it last year, that's a big thing. That's obviously one of the biggest franchises in the league, right up there with the Boston Celtics, and LeBron is still, you know, the biggest name in the sport. It was great that they won it. They got to raise a banner, but you see like how much they've won in the past. And then they completely flamed out in the playoffs. So I think, yeah, I thought last year there was a little bit more buzz to it. This year, I'm not really feeling it. If I were the league, I would do it every other year, but I know two things. That's not going to happen, and they're definitely not going to listen to me.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I mean, I thought it was Steph Curry has that awesome night against Dallas to start the tournament or early on in the tournament. I thought, yeah, there'd be a couple chapters like this. Like, clearly, that night meant something different than the NBA Cup, but I also thought it was partly that, and frankly, it hasn't felt all that much different despite, you know, what maybe tomorrow will bring something a little bit different in that we're going to actually have some things shake down. But I think intentions for all these teams seem to be a little bit different, and picking out which teams actually care about it has become a bit of a challenge here. One team that can enter potentially with a win is the Oklahoma City Thunder, who lost last night to Houston in a nail-biter in the end. The Thunder are an interesting team to us because we support Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, north of the border, of course, our best basketball export. But this is a team that had all the expectation in the world in the Western Conference, have been slow playing their build up into championship form, and I watched them, and I still think maybe they're a piece away. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think last year the experience of going through the playoffs in the long run will be good for them. I still think, you know, the real way to judge them is when Chet Holmgren comes back. You know, he's got that busted hip, so it's going to be a while. But they did add some toughness in Isaiah Hartenstein. So they do look, you know, they're a little light along the front line, not enough size with Chet Holmgren there. So I'm willing to, you know, hold off judgment on them until they're at full strength. I think they're legit. The only thing is, you know, when it gets down to the playoffs, and, you know, your guy Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did well last year, but, you know, late in these games, I mean, you look at Luka Doncic, how good he was. Anthony Edwards was terrific. We've seen Nikola Jokic doing the playoffs. So that's going to be the big thing for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Late in these games, you know, he's going to have to be the guy. It doesn't mean always necessarily scoring, but creating for guys, and there'll be a lot more pressure on him. Because the one thing is, when you play in certain markets, and we saw this with Damian Lillard when he was in Portland, and you see it with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in a place like Oklahoma City. You know, everyone, anytime anybody talks about them, and rightfully so, it's mostly positive, but there's going to come a point where you're going to need to produce in big moments in the playoffs. Like, if you look at Lillard when he played in Portland, he made it to a conference finals. It was the year that Toronto won the championship. They played the Golden State Warriors, and the Warriors didn't have Kevin Durant, and Damian Lillard got swept. So in the biggest moment of his career, he didn't even take a game off a team that was missing Kevin Durant, and they had a double-digit lead in all four of those games that they ended up losing. And I think the same thing with Oklahoma City and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He clearly is the guy, but ultimately he's going to be judged on how he does in the postseason. I think most people willing to give him, he was fine last year, but they did, you know, but they did lose in the second round. It looked like maybe Dallas with Luka was a little banged up, but they came back and won it. But ultimately, he'll be judged on how he does in the playoffs, as will that team. They're really good, and they have the assets to make a move. But I think the way that they look at it, let's let this team kind of go through some of the growing pains and, you know, see how they come out on the other side.
When you mention growing pains, I think it's natural to ask about the Raptors next. You know, they're 6-15, and still two teams below them in the East, the Sixers, which is a surprise to some, and the Wizards, of course. When you watch this Raptors team, when you catch them, they got a lot of young talent, a lot of young youth, and they've gotten the injury bug early on. But then when they win games, I think the fan base is a bit like, Dad, don't win, because we want you to tank and capture the flag. When you evaluate where this Raptors team is at and maybe what their priority should be for the rest of the season, is it just trying to get healthy bodies on the floor and create some chemistry, or is there enough upside that they can see themselves playing for something, whether it's a play-in or something meaningful in the next year or two?
You know, it's funny. I watched them in the preseason live in Brooklyn, and I really liked, first of all, they play really hard. Mm-hmm. They got a lot of good young players, and I thought Jakob Poeltl was excellent. Yeah. I would try to do something with him because I think they, you know, a team like the Warriors, for example, I think there's a lot of teams that are contending teams that could really use him. I mean, Scotty Barnes, as long as he could stay healthy, he's going to be one of the top players in the league. And I think if you're looking at it realistically, this is a really good draft. And if you can get almost like a top 5, 6, 7, even 8 draft pick, you have a chance to get a really good player. So I get it. You don't want to give up on your season, you know, in early December. But I do think when you look at the landscape in the NBA, you know, doing something like that and maybe getting something back for Poeltl would not be the worst thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, there seems to be some pushback in this market because if you trade Poeltl, you're going to eventually need the Poeltl. But it's all about trying to line up the expectations and when you're going to be competitive. And I'm not sure that they've planned this faultlessly. Like, I do think, you know, if it's about being bad, I think they're frankly too good to be that bad. But we'll see how this season plays out and what they're able to net in the draft. But I'm thinking that, you know, Poeltl might stay put. And I think a lot of the conversation about the Raptors will be about that. Okay, last one for you, Frank. We got the Celtics and Heat on the network tonight. No Jimmy Butler. Heat are 9-9. This is an older roster. Is there a way to inject some life into this? Or does it feel kind of window closed on this iteration of Miami?
Yeah, it does kind of feel like that. And I do think that Pat Riley, you know, he's one of these guys every day. He's thinking about what they can do to win a championship. So there might be a big trade somewhere out there in the future for the Miami Heat. If you look at what happened when they played Detroit, was that a couple of weeks back? Remember Eric Spoelstra? You know, that's, you know, one of the top coaches in the league. And, you know, he called a timeout that they didn't have and ended up losing the game because of that. You could just see how frustrated. He was so frustrated in his team that in that moment, he just temporarily lost his mind. And he was so upset that he called a timeout. So clearly, things aren't right in Miami. It just doesn't seem like it's a, you know, the Miami Heat that we're used to seeing. They still have some really good players, Bam Adebayo. The one trade, I would look at Jimmy Butler. It could potentially be a possibility. And also Tyler Hero. I just think that the Miami Heat are going to do something. Because if they're being realistic about it, they're nowhere near the Boston Celtics. You know, the Celtics are just that much better. And these other teams, they might not even be the best team in Florida. I mean, look how well Orlando has played. They've won 12 of their last 13, and Paolo Banchero hasn't played any of them. I mean, not a lot of teams, you remove their best player, they're not winning 12 or 13 games. So you've got Orlando, you've got Cleveland, and of course, I think the New York Knicks, who have a good record now, but I think the Knicks will get better as the year goes on, and they get a little bit healthier as well. That's why I think Pat Riley, he's not naive. He's been doing this for a long time. I think that he knows he's got to make some kind of bold move here.
Yeah, trade deadline, you know, not right around the corner, but definitely start circling some names and some heavy players. Frank, we appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy the basketball, and we'll catch up soon.
All right, thanks, guys. I wish I was as old as Marc-Andre Fleury.
he turned 40 4 days ago, Frank, so I'm feeling
oldest in the league.
Slightly more justified.
He's 4 years older than me. How about that?
There you go.
Thanks,
to the
Frank.
Day.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That's Frank Isola of SiriusXM NBA Radio and Around the Horn. And, yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury, the oldest in the NHL. Not in the NBA. Who's the oldest in the NBA?
Ooh, that's a good question. We could probably workshop that in the break. Do you want to tease what we're talking about
LeBron
the other
James,
side?
Isn't he?
I guess he would be close. There might be someone, though.
Isn't he 40? Yeah.
Big, hanging out on a bench.
I think he's also 40. And I think he's the oldest in the NBA.
Okay.
I know why I had to think about that.
Is that if you know it? Then you know it.
I'm going with my gut.
Okay.
The entire Celtics starting lineup is on the injury report for tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing the Heat, as we mentioned. Heat without Jimmy Butler, but Celtics still like 8.5 point favorites. I think they're probably going to get some of those guys back, but at least questionable was Tatum, Brown, White, Porzingis, Horford, and Holiday. So
everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone who means something to that team is
yeah, but they still can beat the Heat, I guess. So there you go.
Okay. I want to take the points if they're all out, but
yes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we'll see. The game's still about an hour away. It'll be on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1 with a 7:30 start. We'll come back after the break. Justin Williams will join us in about 10 minutes. Mr. Game 7, Stanley Cup champ, 3 times over, special assistant to the general manager with the Carolina Hurricanes. And we'll start that convo off by giving you a little Juan Soto and Jay's tidbit from Andy Martino, which just back up the Brinks truck. Is a way that we'll line that one up. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the next half hour, and then we'll send it to Sportsnet for Miami and Boston on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet. Not Emirates Cup action, but important action nonetheless.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess there's some degree of debate over whether or not tomorrow night is all that important, given that we talked to basketball insiders
all
who aren't necessarily all that fired up about the NBA Cup, but I still am. It's a big one. We're going to get, you know, some decisive results tomorrow night. It's going to be a good one.
Okay, decisive results would be where Juan Soto decides to go. We are not there yet, but we do have a little bit of updates for you. Andy Martino of SNY had an article out today with, this is the main summary of it. Quote, there's a widespread belief among bidders that Toronto will come in with the highest offer for Juan Soto. Soto has no need to inflate the perception of his market by adding teams that aren't legitimately in it. When asked about where Juan Soto wants to play, said, I don't think anyone knows where Juan wants to play except for Juan and Scott Boras and maybe Juan's family. Maybe Juan's family. Just maybe. In terms of the lack of action, says that Boras doesn't really need to publicly land, does not need publicity to land Soto the largest contract in the history of the sport. With the Blue Jays, Mets, Red Sox, and Yankees widely perceived to be financially aggressive, it's hard to see any strategic purpose in conducting the business in public. And no mistake that everyone's all in, but Toronto having the biggest pile of cash to offer.
Yeah, at least for now, right?
Yeah.
Because this is a negotiation, and maybe the Blue Jays are being the most upfront with what they're willing to offer from a financial standpoint. I mean, I hate falling into the same trap, but it kind of feels like we may be, right? Like the Blue Jays have this bag of money, and it's a really big bag of money, and I know that other teams, or they know other teams, could match that size of money bag in the end. And yeah, is this a leverage position? It may very well be. Again, the fact that they're willing to chase this guy, that the money might be the most with them right now, I think is all a positive thing, but it's all things we knew. We knew if they're going to be interest, that money won't get in the way. It's just, I'm not sure what it does for the Blue Jays. I'm not sure that it matters much to Juan Soto. And I guess it's going to take more than just, yeah, they're offering the most for something to really materially change.
I don't know. I just, if you said, let's put a number out there. If Blue Jays have said, we'll give you $750 million, and they said that that's the most amount of money right now, I guess they do have the lever. They have the upper hand right now. They've put down their final amount, or maybe their biggest amount, and other teams need to either pony up or get out.
Yeah, but the Blue Jays have been in that position many times historically where it's like, yeah, we'll set the mark here, and then everyone else will be made aware of that mark, and then a team that
actually... Are you talking about the Ohtani situation?
Yes, but also in previous
negotiations. The Ohtani one feels to me like he just... There was other...
The Blue Jays are the bridesmaids a bunch of times in their history. Okay. Like, there's been a history of this. And Scott Boras, I don't know if it should be any coincidence, was talking so glowingly about the Blue Jays and what they're doing before free agency even began in earnest. It just feels like it's all a ploy for them, at least to me. And again, if the Blue Jays do put a mark that no one can match, then they may well get Juan Soto. But if they put out there that, yeah, this is where we'd be willing to go, and it's more than maybe initially reported or more than teams would want to go at this point in the negotiation process, maybe it'll be that until it's someone else. But again, I think if they go way over the top and knock his socks off and it's just about money, sure, it may be the Blue Jays, but until it's that, it's just the benchmark that another team has to get to.
Is this this Ken Rosenthal tidbit in here something that you discovered?
Well, Ken Rosenthal did write today
that
what is this? Signing Soto would almost certainly ensure that Guerrero's departure would happen next season.
I think that's the bigger headline.
Yeah.
You sign Soto, you lose Vladdy? Like,
again, it just kind of goes back to, yeah, they're very convinced about Juan Soto, and I don't know exactly what that means, but they're unconvinced when it comes to paying Vladimir Guerrero Jr. even, what, 60% of what Juan Soto will get in free agency? Maybe part of it, and I'm just trying to figure it out because it doesn't make sense to me. Why have Soto if you don't have Guerrero? Would just be like restarting the clock on...
Another discussion in 5-10...
No, but I mean restarting the clock on Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro, where it's just like, okay, we tried, the first era didn't work, but we have Juan Soto to build
another
around
era
now from the next, for the next 5 to 10 years. And boy, oh boy, why wouldn't we think we could win a World Series when we have a lot of resources at our disposal, a bunch of decent players on our roster now that could maybe be traded and whatever, we could restock the cupboards. But it all starts with Juan Soto. And yeah, we're going to win around this guy. Don't you worry. That's what kind of concerns me because this Vladdy thing is eroding in a way that I don't even think was possible, to be honest.
Yeah, when I saw this, that it would almost certainly ensure that Vladdy's departure would be next season. I mean, I'm picturing him and Juan Soto being a part of this team, having those two-headed monster. Maybe you lose Bo in the meantime, but to just pick one and lose the other is a step forward. Juan Soto is probably...
To have Soto and not Guerrero, what's the point?
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's I think technically it's a step forward. Like, I'd say Juan Soto's a better baseball player than Vladdy, but
But Juan Soto is what they're
that?
Missing.
Yes.
And if you get rid of everything else that you currently
then
have,
he's playing with
you're going to be missing other things.
Yeah. And
everything.
It's a tricky one. All right. We'll keep you updated. Next Juan Soto news drop coming your way. But hopefully things speed up. It's December. It's past U.S. Thanksgiving and time to kind of get the ball rolling here. Let's shift over to NHL one last time for the night. We got a couple games on Sportsnet Plus tonight, and we'll bring in Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, Stanley Cup champ and special advisor to the GM of the Carolina Hurricanes. Justin, we appreciate you jumping on. How are you?
Hi, guys. I'm great. Jeez, I just locked my beard. I got shaved. Full of grays in there, too. Holy smokes.
Looking good. Looking good. I like the little shrine you got back there, too.
Yeah. Well, you accumulate so much throughout the years that I was like, you know what? I should do something with it. So I put it in a little area back there.
Yeah, that's
great.
Protective something. Glass worthy of a Hockey Hall of Fame, for which I'm sure you have a few items in, given your success in big games. This current iteration of the Maple Leafs, maybe not so many items. I'm sure there's a couple things that they've been able to donate. But the Maple Leafs are obviously the story in this market, and they've got a new head coach in Craig Berube. And nights so far in games and results that have, frankly, felt a little different. Are you picking up on differences in this version of this Maple Leafs team since they've taken under new leadership?
I don't know if you, I mean, as far as an outsider who doesn't watch them every day, I'm not sure that you can really pick up any distinct changes in them. I think the proof will be later on in the season when Berube gets his everybody accustomed to how he wants to play. And really, as you know, the way you put it, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, it's you're not going to really analyze anything until the playoffs are done. And that's when you're going to do it. But right now, I think he's just instilling in system and doing it while winning is pretty good, which he's doing right now.
I think one of the main points of, I guess, like appreciation of this offseason has been this goalie tandem that the Maple Leafs have. And I just mean in general, when you've played for a team that has a really good tandem, not just a 1A and a 1B that, you know, you don't feel as much trust with, having two goalies that are really strong, like how much does that do for a group? You know, every night getting in there, feeling like you can play confidently, you can play aggressively in front of your goaltenders because they have your back. I don't think we've experienced that much in Toronto, but we seem to have it with Joseph Woll and Anthony Stolarz. And I wonder as a player, what that feels like.
Well, as a player, you want that goalie, that whoever's in the net, you want him to want the net and you want to work your tail off for him. And that goes with being around them every day. Like, how hard do they work at practice? You know, how committed are they to the team? How do they gel with everybody? I mean, all this thing kind of goes into playing for one another. And I think obviously Coach Berube has alluded to that a lot. You got to play for one another. You got to work hard for the people that you care about, and you work a little bit harder because of it. That's what you want as a goalie. You want a guy who's going to compete, who's going to work his tail off, who's going to get pissed when a goal gets behind them, and do his best for you. And it's very important to have two, because that's kind of the way the NHL is, Rob. It's very rare. You probably have about four or five goalies in the league who want to and excel at playing over 60 games. Other than that, you don't have to look too far from us here in North Carolina here, or the Hurricanes, where, you know, we've used, minimum four, maybe even five goalies so far this year. So it's been a lot.
So it's another year for the Maple Leafs, which means it's another negotiation with a superstar. It seems it's like an ongoing, unending process, at least with this team. And I'm sure it is with most teams where you're just trying to keep everyone together. You're trying to make sure that all the dollars and cents work. But your experience, and some was pre-cap, but most of it post-cap, the internal hierarchy when it comes to finances, like how much does it matter? It's something that this team, again, the Leafs are facing over and over and over again because guys are signing new deals for different periods of time. And we got Mitch Marner and John Tavares coming up here. But how problematic is it when there is a structure that may be threatened in terms of hierarchy? Does it really matter? Can guys get over that? Is it something that does weigh on a group when it is so top of mind?
I can't speak for superstars because I never was one, but it's good to have them. You know, Toronto, you have some, so that's a good start right there. Keeping them happy, yeah, that's another thing. But I think it gets overblown a little bit. I mean, there's no one in the dressing room saying I got to make more money than this guy. It's just that's not the way we're really wired. We want to get what's fair. Players want to get what's fair. I get it. And I'm on the other side of it now. So management wants to get something that's fair also. You'll hear that word a lot. So, you know, to answer your question of how to keep them happy and you know, a hierarchy within a team, it's always nice to have a top dog. So you can slot everyone in underneath it. And, you know, when I was going into a negotiation, I'd be like, okay, well, where's this guy? Where's this guy? Or where do I slot in on this team? And where do I slot in compared to this guy? And you just kind of want to get in that area and you have to be comfortable with it. And, you know, Toronto's got, as I said, a few superstars. And I know where they should be slotted. I'm not sure they do, but I'd be interested to get a read on that dynamic.
It'll be an interesting off season when it gets there and see where everybody's slotted and if they're slotted in this market moving forward. They're going to play the Blackhawks tonight, and Connor Bedard, mm-hmm. obviously coming to town, is always a big event. But he hasn't had the hottest of starts for this season. I wonder, when you're dealing with a player that is, you know, the face of a league, the face of a class, maybe the face of a team, when they have a slower start or they're not living up to expectations, like how difficult is it to kind of stoke the fire and have those high expectations, specifically for a young kid like this? He's getting touted to maybe play for Team Canada, the Four Nations, and now we're wondering mm-hmm. if he's going to make the team or not. Like, how tricky are those situations when somebody's young and hasn't really gone through adversity yet?
Yeah, I mean, he's at the tender age of 19, 19. He's been through a lot already. He's had a lot on his shoulders. I don't think anybody can argue that. You know, he's kind of been anointed as the next, and it's a hard thing to become. He's very capable of doing it. He's a very talented player. He's unbelievable. He seems to have the right attitude for it too, not knowing him personally. But I think a lot of hockey players, we are just, I would say, we want to please everybody. We don't want to be the guy who's labeled as overpaid or overhyped or over this. We want to meet expectations, and he's got high expectations, and those are tough to swallow at times. But you know, with great talent comes expectation, mm-hmm. and I have no doubt that he's going to hit it. It might take a few years, but I mean, he's going to be, as you said, a face of this league for a long time.
Oh, we're on the line with three-time Stanley Cup champion Justin Williams. What's gotten into Marty Natchez? First star Ooh. Of the month of November, who's having a tremendous year. What's clicked?
Seems like everything right now. Everything he's touching seems to go in. And that's such a great feeling as a hockey player when you shoot the puck and you think it's going to go in the net. Because I've been in, and Marty Natchez has too, where you shoot the puck and you're just like, I know this is not going in. I don't know why I'm shooting it, but everything he's throwing at the net right now has a chance to go in. And that's great. That's great. Is it going to, you know, keep up? I hope so. You know, he's been a great player for us. He's you know, obviously a huge reason why we're standing where we are in the standings. And, you know, he's trying to take that leap from star to superstar. And you know, I hope that he can continue this pace, and I expect he will.
Yeah, he had an unbelievable November, 22 points, sitting second in points in the NHL. So it's been a fun run for him. But you mentioned earlier, like, the goaltending issue, just having like such a run of bodies and injury and health concerns. Is that the main thing holding the Hurricanes back? Because every year, everyone loves picking the Hurricanes. They're like the sexy pick, the analytical pick, you know, everything on numbers, eye test always looks really good with the Hurricanes. Getting more structure, stability in net, is that what's going to make this a year that goes a little further?
Well, I think so. And I think that's, I'm not being out of line here with being, that's kind of been the, where are we going into the season type conversation that's been here in Carolina. And obviously coming into the season, we're extremely confident with our goaltenders, but you know, Freddie's had a tough time. Freddie Anderson's had a tough time staying healthy. You know, we expect him back. He's in, you know, California, did some surgery. Hopefully he gets back healthy and ready for a push. But the other side of it is Pyotr Kochetkov. He's a great goalie who has a ability right now to kind of take the net. And that's got to be very exciting for him. I know he is. And going back to your question about the Leafs goaltending, he's a guy that the guys love playing in front of. He's a battler. You know, he'll stick up for his teammates. You know, he's got a ball of energy out there, and he's fun to be around, and guys love playing in front of him. So I, you know, the hope is that he takes this and runs with it and solidifies himself as a number one.
We found a great stat. I think it was last week. We were looking at, you know, the team's numbers when trailing, and there was one huge outlier. It was the Carolina Hurricanes. We're talking about possession, whether it was shots or shot attempts. I think it was around 58% possession for the Carolina Hurricanes when leading games, and everybody else fell short of the 50% clip. Like, it was a complete difference between one team and the rest of the teams. When you guys are leading, you guys are still pushing. Does the eye test bear all that out? And what's different about what Rod Brendamore does when leading games compared to everybody else in the NHL?
Well, I think, you know, Roddy, he's, you know, everyone kind of knows his attitude and his history and, you know, his beliefs, but it's just the same to start is the same to finish. Now everybody can say that, right? But to actually go out there and do it over and over and over again, that's kind of what the mantra is here in Carolina, just from start to finish. And, you know, with the, I guess, the law of averages or whatever you said, you know, our game is predicated on shot volume. And, you know, if it doesn't happen in the first period, you know, the big thing is stay with it. Cause, you know, we might throw 12 shots at a net in the first period, 14 in the second period, and none have gone in, but maybe in the third period, three of those 10 shots go in. And that's kind of what Carolina Hurricanes hockey is here. We're just going to stay with it. We're going to keep pounding you, keep putting pressure on you. And hopefully at the end of 60 minutes or 65 minutes, you know, you're going to find a little hole in there and you're going to be able to expose it.
One last one for you, Justin. We appreciate your time. Four Nations face off right around the corner, the return of best of best hockey.
Yeah.
You got the opportunity to represent Canada at a couple World Championships. I saw you're out on the ice for the Legends Classic. I don't know if your name's in the running to make the team for Canada coming up, but what do you make of the team, the roster? Like, a lot of excitement around naming some of these new faces for Canada, and you've had a chance to wear that jersey.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And going back to the Legends thing, I was a little worried because I hadn't skated in a while. But then I got in the dressing room and when I was checking out, I was going to say, what's the pace going to be like? And I looked around the dressing room. And I was like, okay, I think I'll be fine around here. Some guys have let themselves go a little bit here. I think the pace will be just fine. The Four Nations is awesome. I think a lot of people are looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a World Cup. It's not an Olympics. You know, we're just trying to figure out what it is, but we know it's going to be the best players in the world playing against each other. And there's a little bit extra when your country's on your front. That's exactly what it is. So we're going to see some great hockey. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I know a lot of hockey fans are as well, because it's been too long. You know, and hopefully at some point here in the near future, after this one's gone, we'll get it more than Four Nations.
Yeah.
Should be a good collection of Hurricanes on that. I guess Rod Brendamore didn't hold a practice today and celebrate everyone who did make it, like John Tortorella, following the memo that the NHL probably put out there to a T.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I was at practice today. It was a full practice.
Okay.
We got we lost 6-0 last game. It wasn't
yeah. No celebratory
time off.
You can save the celebrations for a little later.
That's great. Justin, we appreciate your time tonight. Enjoy all the hockey to come. Best of luck to your team this season and to Canada coming around the corner there with the Four Nations. We appreciate it.
Hey. Thank you.
Thanks so much. It's Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, 3-time Stanley Cup champ and special advisor to the general manager for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, glad he joined us because a couple eye-opening losses to the Florida Panthers for Carolina in the last couple games. Florida maybe reasserting itself in the last week and Carolina coming down just a little bit, but you can blame it maybe on the goaltending just a touch because, yeah, they've run into some issues here. He mentioned Freddie Anderson having some surgery. Kochetkov was out after getting bowled over about 10 days ago.
He was back on the ice.
Was he back on the ice? So they're definitely searching for something, but as long as they have Kochetkov, they should be okay. But I wonder what they do ahead of the deadline because this is a team that was a little gun-shy for the rentals, went out and got Gensel last year, then Gensel goes to Tampa Bay in the offseason. It's one of those teams like Winnipeg and a couple others that don't love trading all those assets for rentals, and they went for it, and it didn't quite work out.
Yeah, the reason I remember he was back on the ice is because I saw a video floating around on Twitter today where he comes back on the ice and says, "I'm back." I don't know how to abbreviate that without swearing.
Okay.
Mothers.
Oh, I thought it would be something a little less than that.
No, he screamed it to all the reporters.
Okay. He's a passionate guy.
A little bleeping there.
When you're Mr. Game 7, you get away with that type of thing.
No, Piotr Kochetkov.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were talking about
Justin Williams.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the alumni.
No, he's back on the ice.
Okay.
From his concussion.
That's a little bit more of the Kochetkov.
That's not Justin Williams' vibe.
Compared to Justin Williams, yeah.
He's a bit more humble.
I wouldn't put it completely past him, but.
Anywho, we got two games on Sportsnet Plus for you tonight. Devils, Rangers. That's a 7 o'clock one. That's a big one. And Dallas and Utah at 9 o'clock, all on Sportsnet Plus. Of course, Leafs and Blackhawks is on Amazon Prime in about 30 minutes. My best bet's going to come from that game. I think the Leafs are rolling. I have them at the puck line, -1.5 at -150, which is not a lot of value. But if you want them to win by 2.5, it's +125. I also have some revenge angles.
Getting the ladder out.
Yeah, I like a ladder.
+125 on a 3-goal game
is pretty crazy. But Stolarz is a net. The Leafs looking really good. I have some revenge goals for you. Bertuzzi, remember him?
Yeah. Mikheyev. Is he still on the fourth line there in Chicago?
Mikheyev, remember him?
Yeah.
And Foligno. So a lot of familiar faces come to town.
Yeah.
Revenge.
Yeah, guys who are not exactly.
I don't know how many
points.
Of them are going to actually score, so just sprinkle at your own will.
That should be your pick every single day. Revenge.
I like that.
With an exclamation mark. That's good. Okay, Monday Night Football tonight, Browns and Broncos. Jameis Winston, just like when he's got more attention, I believe more.
I love him.
In Jameis Winston. I think the Browns are live. They're 6-point dogs. I'm not going to take the points because if I am taking the points, I guess they can win. So I'll play the Browns +230 on the money line. They just beat the Steelers. Maybe there's some late season life in the Browns, who also have Myles Garrett, who's campaigning for defensive player of the year. TJ Watt went off with a couple sacks over the weekend, so maybe he'll have to up his game, track down Bo Nix. It's tough for Bo Nix, a young quarterback, against a talented Browns defense that can make life miserable. So I'll give the Brownies a chance today, +230.
Okay, and one last reminder, if you want to win a bunch of cash while doing the best thing this holiday season, it's Sportsnet 590 The Fan's 50-50 Fortune, supporting food for kids, and here's what you need to know. We've created a 50-50 lottery where the more money we raise, the more kids we can feed in the GTA, and the more you can win. The current take-home prize is over $366,000. Someone is going to win that on Thursday, December 19th. And if you get your tickets early, there are more amazing early bird prizes, including 2 sports packages. One's a pair of tickets to an upcoming Leafs game and a signed William Nylander jersey. The second is a pair of tickets to a Jays game and a signed George Springer jersey. Get your tickets by Friday, December 6th. That's this week already. Wow. At 9 a.m. for the chance to win. And for more details and to buy your tickets, go to foodforkids5050.ca or text the word cash to 59590. We'll send the link right to your phone. It's the 50-50 Fortune, supporting food for kids. Standard message and data rate supply, Ontario only.
December 6th, we're on a $500,000 trajectory here. Maybe we extend this thing. We're going to have to talk to some people.
Yeah, what happens if we get to a million?
And we make someone a millionaire.
That's awesome. Please get involved. Get your tickets by this Friday for the chance to win. And how about that PWHL opening weekend?
I'll ask you, how about it?
It was
an A+.
It was an A+.
Pretty good.
Yeah, we had overtime, a shootout, and regulation win for
scenes in Montreal. They know how to do it.
Montreal jam-packed, over 10,000. I was at the Toronto game here. Awesome as well. Wins all around. All right. That's it for us tonight. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night.